The World Cup with William Hill.
The Punt Daily Podcast. Listen at news.williamhill.com on Audioboom or subscribe by iTunes or your preferred podcast provider.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the Daily World Cup podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio, about to be joined by Derek McGovern and Andy Excel to spin you through some of the anti-post markets here with William Hill. We'll look at the outright betting, the tournament top goal scorer, and we'll go through the England team markets as well on this edition of the podcast. We're also going to hear from the Daily Mirror's chief football writer, John Cross, who joins Mark Walton on the day before he heads out to Russia to speak about all things England and the setup in the camp as well. And we will also preview that opening group game in Group A as Russia take on Saudi Arabia, and Alex Dunn is going to give you the best bets on that one very, very shortly. But first, we're going to hear from Derek McGovern and Andy Excel. It's good to have the band back together. First of all, a good morning to you, Derek McGovern.
Good morning, Dave. The fun boy today. We thought our season was over, but we've been brought back out of retirement.
How are you? Are you well?
Yes, yes. I know your next question is, are you going to look forward to the, you're looking forward to the World Cup. I know that. And you know what my answer is. No, I used to. You know what?
That's why we have you on the podcast, Derek.
Years ago, I used to love the World Cup. I mean, I'd be looking forward to the next one a week after the previous one was over. I used to think, if I'm going to die, please don't let it be like a year before the World Cup. Let me die like straight after one. I don't want to go 3 years and then I can't see the next. But I've been thinking, the last decent World Cup, the last World Cup I enjoyed, 1994. Seriously, it is. And that's only because of Diana Ross's penalty taken. The rest of since then, they've been absolutely diabolical. It just leaves me cold now, especially England.
Oh, that's why we've got you on the podcast, Derek, for that upbeat nature of yours. Andy Excel is here to provide us with the William Hill betting angle as well. Andy, bring a bit of joy to this podcast, please.
I was thinking about the band being back together. It's like Take That without Robbie Williams. But I aspire to be as old and cynical as Derek.
I wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy, Andy.
No, my enthusiasm for the World Cup was diminished a few weeks ago, but as I'm getting closer, I am actually getting excited about it.
So, yeah, I can't wait.
Let's get started.
Derek the curmudgeon. Let's spin through the outright betting here with William Hill then. Brazil 4-1 tournament leaders as far as the outright betting is concerned. Germany are 9-2, France 11-2, Spain 6-1, Argentina 9-1, Belgium in the betting at 11-1 and 16-1 and bigger the rest. Andy, I was talking to Hjalmar Kvam, who is the head of pre-match trading, and he was saying all the cash in the build-up to the World Cup has been for Brazil, and they have tightened at the top of the betting into 4-1. There seems to be real confidence behind Tite's side. Since he took over, they've been like a wrecking ball, really. They've been steamrolling sides, and he doesn't have a particularly deep squad to work with, but that starting 11 does look very, very strong.
Yeah, they're rightly favourites. You know, they've rolled through that South American qualifying, which I actually think is tougher than a lot of people think. I think there's a lot of good teams in that tournament. You know, Argentina, yeah, they underperformed in qualifying, but it also tells you the other teams in it are pretty decent. So, yeah, they're rightly favourites. In terms of, great Scrabble scorer is Hjalmar Kvam. He's right. The number of bets and also the biggest loser in the book is Brazil. So, yeah, we don't want a Brazilian.
Okay, Brazil at the top of the betting currently here with William Hill at 4-1. Derek, how do you rate their chances?
Well, they are worthy favourites. You're looking at the squad and there doesn't seem to be a weakness. But, you know, we said that about them 4 years ago when they were on home soil, and look how that finished. They've got an easy group to get out of than the Drifters in this one. So they'll, you know, there's no danger about them qualifying. But their record in European World Cups, it's poor, isn't it, for a team of their calibre. I just feel something could go wrong with Brazil, and I wouldn't be backing them both prices.
Germany next in the betting here with William Hill. They are 9-2. It's a German side that they've been able to afford to leave some star names out, Derek. This Germany squad look as strong as ever in the betting at 9-2.
I don't think they are as strong as ever. It's just I think Germany is sending out distress signals, and not too many people are taking notice. I look at this squad, and I don't see them. I know they always, you always say you can't, Germany, they never impress you, and then they get through the group, and then all of a sudden they come on strong, and then in the semi-finals, and next minute they've won it. I can't see it this round. And I would even suggest, you know, group F they're in, it's not an easy group that people are saying they'll walk through it. Mexico, Sweden, and South Korea. If there's going to be a big shock in the early stages, it could well be Germany not going through. I'm fielding against them big time in this World Cup.
What about you, Andy? Germany?
I have similar thoughts. If you took the names in that squad and replaced the name Germany at the top with Belgium, you know, you wouldn't back them. Mm. But it's just because they're called Germany. So, you know, they always do find a way. And, you know, the old great saying, don't underestimate the Germans, ruthlessly efficient, all of that. Get to the semi-final every time. But I can't see the squad, so I'm not buying into them, even though the punters like them. They're also second in terms of number of bets placed, and they're one of three losers in the book currently. So, you know, they're another one we don't want, but I'm not worried about them.
They are 9-2 in the betting. France are 11-2. I'll be intrigued, Derek, to see how Paul Pogba performs in this World Cup, because he's clearly been restricted for Manchester United this season under Jose Mourinho. There's a togetherness, I think, with this France squad. Didier Deschamps has got them rolling to a certain extent, and I fancy Pogba might have a pretty big World Cup.
Well, I think he will as well, because I think he's a tremendous player. But it's a bit worrying that, you know, he was useless. He was useless most of the season with Man United. I'd blame the manager for that, by the way. But he was also getting catcalls from the French supporters in a recent game. I think it was against Italy, and that doesn't bode well. I think he's a tremendous player, but there are question marks about him at the moment. And France looks strong, and they've got Australia in their group, Peru in their group, Denmark in their group. I don't think they're going to have any trouble getting through. But again, if I was looking for an outright bet at these odds, I'd be looking for a bigger price team. I think they're too short.
Okay, Andy, France, they've got such an array of attacking talent. Antoine Griezmann, Kylian Mbappe, Ousmane Dembele, if he's fit as well. Pretty strong midfield with Paul Pogba and N'Golo Kante holding the fort. I quite like the look of France, I must admit.
Yeah, they've got a look about them of possible winners, but I'm not sure they're probable winners. The front three, they look like they might even play with a front three of Griezmann, Mbappe and Giroud. Giroud plays virtually every game for them. The manager likes him. So, you know, they'll score goals. I just always think there's a bad performance in them. And I think they'll come undone some stage in the knockout stages. But, yeah, they're possible winners. Can't rule them out. Again, number of bets, they come in third in the list. They're fancied by the punters. But I somehow get a feeling they're going to trip up somewhere.
Spain are in the betting at 6-1. Spain, very interesting. We're recording this at 11:15 on Wednesday morning. And just in the last 5 minutes, a bit of breaking news for you here. Julen Lopetegui has been sacked as Spain manager after accepting the Real Madrid job. That is a crazy announcement. Well, he made a crazy announcement just before the World Cup, and the Spanish FA have decided to get rid of him. Now, we don't even know at this moment in time, Derek, who's going to lead Spain into the World Cup. That must be detrimental to their chances, surely.
I can't believe they've done that, because didn't the same happen in 1990 with England, when Bobby Robson was taking England to the World Cup, and then it became known during that tournament that he was going off somewhere. I can't remember where it was he was going. And yet he still stayed in charge of the team, and you know, took them to the semi-final. You can't blame the Spain manager for taking the Real Madrid job. Maybe there's a big problem in the fact that it's been revealed now. The timing stinks. But I can't believe Spain have sacked him. I can't believe that. It's just madness.
It is astounding news. It's literally just breaking as we record this podcast, so it's difficult to react to it. But we don't know at this moment in time, Derek, who's going to lead Spain into that first World Cup match. And if you're thinking about backing Spain at 6-1, that's got to be weighing heavily on your mind now.
Well, you'd have to think that they'd go out after that, wouldn't you? And I've been looking at the Spain squad, and there's a definitely element of past their best in it, isn't there? There really is. I mean, you know, they're so old now, most of the Spaniards, that they no longer dive when fouled in the box. Instead, they have a terrible fall. I look at the strikers as well, and Diego Costa, you know my feelings about him. I think the weak up front, I couldn't touch Spain. Watch it. It's like when you watch them, we know what exactly how they're going to play. Like, it's like suffering a slow death, or at least when you play against them. Slow death from 1,000 tiny cuts, a bit like living in this country. But it takes them so many passes to set up a goal-scoring opportunity. But at the time they've got a shot off, you've lost interest. I can't have them. They've got no manager, got no strikers in my eyes. They'll go through from their group because they've got Morocco and Iran in it. But I'd be fielding against them in the first knockout stage.
Andy, how do you feel about Spain before and after that news?
Before, they're coming to the same category as I mentioned for a previous team. Possible, but maybe not probable winners. More probable than the previous team. But losing that manager just before the tournament, that's either got to be a massive negative or a massive positive, and it's far more likely to be a massive negative.
Yeah.
The positive might be that the players just sort of all rally round and say, right, we're going to do this despite. But I don't see that. I think it's far more likely that there'll be an unhappy camp, an unsettled camp. I can't really be with them losing the manager just before the tournament.
And we got to remember as well, that success they had in major international tournaments in 2008, 2010, 2012 wasn't replicated in the last two international tournaments. The World Cup in Brazil in 2014 went out in the group stages, and they endured disappointment again in France 2016. So last couple of international tournaments not being as impressive as the three that preceded them. So Spain 6-1 in the betting. Been through the top four in the market. We're betting 9-1 bar those top four. Let's get your World Cup 2018 selections, chaps. Derek, who are you backing to win the World Cup?
Well, I know you're gonna poo-poo this, the pair yet, but something inside of me is screaming that Croatia are the value call at 28-1.
I thought you were going to say England then for a second, no. Derek.
I wish whatever it was screaming, I wish it would shut off. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, no. Because they're in a tough group, Nigeria, Iceland, Argentina, but that's the reason there's such a big price. I'm just looking at it. Croatia at 28-1 or England at 16-1. I mean, there's no contest, is that? I'd rather be on Croatia all day long. They've got players, you know, experienced players who know how to win big games. And I've got doubts about the market leaders. I know the World Cup is always won by one of the usual suspects. You know, the Brazil, Argentina, Germany, etc. I've got a feeling that might change this time around. I think there could be a shock. Croatia and Sweden, I'm bracketing in of those two, Croatia are more likely to win it, because if Sweden gets to the semi-final, they'll suddenly brick themselves and go out to the semis. Whereas if Croatia get there, you could see them actually going a stage further. So this might sound odd, but I'm going to go for Croatia at 28-1 to win the World Cup. But I'm also going to go for Sweden at 16-1 to reach the semi-finals because they've got no stars, Sweden, but they've qualified well in a difficult, difficult group. They're not exactly in the easiest group now, along with Germany, Mexico and South Korea. That's not the easiest group. But 16-1 to reach the semi-final in a tournament without an outstanding team, in my eyes, I know that people will say Brazil are, I think that's a decent bet.
So you're expecting Zlatko Dalic, Derek, who did take charge before the playoffs against Greece, where they did qualify with authority, to maybe be the surprise package this time round at a big price as well, 28-1. And you'll be hoping Luka Modric has a superb tournament, Derek.
Well, he will, because he's a superb player. Yeah. But he's got decent backup as well. And you know what? I'm not sure when the World Cup comes along, the manager is all that important, you know. I mean, Sven took England to...
Maybe Spain will win it then, Derek.
Yeah, it could well be. It could, but I mean, you know what we were saying about them sacking the manager, it's not so much the fact that they the all of a sudden managerless. It's just that, what does that do to the squad, the confidence in the squad? You know what I mean? I'm not sure. I mean, Argentina won the World Cup in 86. They'd have won it anyway if I was manager, if you were manager, because of Maradona. You know, I'm not sure the manager makes that much of a difference. Sometimes teams win the World Cup despite the manager instead of because of.
Okay. Croatia for Derek. Andy?
Derek's gone where I would have been going, looking at Croatia for the last... But that was 2-4 years ago. I think they're slightly over the top now. And Modric has got all these issues going on with financial stuff going on.
Okay.
You know, there's a few things going on that aren't right in that camp. And I might have been with them 4 years ago, but not so much now. My one is Argentina. Again, they've changed manager. They've struggled through qualifying, but I think South American qualifying is stronger than Europe. Messi seems to have sorted under the new manager, he seems happier. They score less than a goal a game when he doesn't play, and over 2 goals a game when he does play. Now he's Lionel Messi, so you kind of expect that. But I think they've got everything going in the right direction now. In the last 12 tournaments, only 7 teams have made the final, and 2 of them aren't in this tournament, Italy and Holland. So, like Derek says, you've got to go with the usual suspects, and Argentina are one of them. So I think they're the one nobody is talking about, and therefore, if there's a value out there, they're it.
And if you can afford to leave Mauro Icardi out of the squad, Andy, you can be rest assured you've got a decent attacking line.
Yeah, look, if they win the World Cup, it's going to be exciting because they will be conceding goals at the back. Sergio Romero's missing the goalkeeper, so it looks like Willy Caballero is going to be their starting goalkeeper, which you wouldn't really think you'd want that for a World Cup winning team. So it'll be high scoring if they do win it, but I think they can. I think they can overcome that. In terms of teams that might be sort of under the radar a bit, Colombia, Uruguay, I'll keep going with the South American thing. You know, Colombia might well be England's opponents in the last 16, and England will go off favourites for that, but I'd argue that's an each of two. So I can see them getting in. If there's a shock in the group, Derek's just dissed them a little bit earlier, I think Morocco can get in front of Portugal.
Okay.
I think Morocco can send Ronaldo home early.
That is interesting. Morocco maybe to qualify for the knockout stages, which is available at 4-1 if you fancy them to get knocked out in the last 16. If you look at the Morocco team markets here with William Hill, or alternatively, look at Morocco to qualify from their group, which is available on the William Hill website and on the app as well. One of the intriguing or most intriguing pre-tournament markets is top goal scorer, always wide open, and Neymar is the 8-1 favourite with William Hill. Antoine Griezmann is 9-1 alongside Lionel Messi. Cristiano Ronaldo is 14s. Timo Werner 14-1. Gabriel Jesus is 16-1 along with Harry Kane, and it's 18-1 and bigger the rest. I suppose, Andy, from your perspective, this ties in with your outright selection.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, if Argentina are going to go, then Messi. But the other one that I think is a bit overpriced is Higuain. He started virtually every match for him, including under the new manager, ahead of, who was it, that Aguero fella.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's playing centre-forward for the team that's going to go a long way in a tournament, if you're thinking that, then... You know, up at 33, he's around that area, I think he is. That might be a decent bet.
Okay, 33-1, Gonzalo Higuain to be the top goal scorer for Andy. Derek?
Well, a similar price. I think he was 33. He might come down to 28-1 now. Edinson Cavani for Uruguay. And he scored a million goals at club level. I know that's only in France, and he's been playing against Cannon fodder for most of those 2 years. I think he scored 40 goals in each of the last 2 seasons for them. But, you know, he's playing cannon fodder in the group. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, even Russia are no great shakes. He could fill his boots in those opening group games.
Yeah.
I mean, you say that, but and then teams play negatively. The minnows play negatively, and they get beat 1-0 or draw 0-0 in the openers. But you've got to fancy him. He's a proven goal scorer, experienced player, and he's, 28-1, 33-1 in an easy group. And Uruguay are no mugs. They're definitely going to get to the knockout stage. You know, and as I say, I don't think there's an outstanding team in this tournament. They could go a long way, and if they do, Cavani is a big player in this market.
Okay, we're going to hear from John Cross very shortly, the Daily Mirror's chief football writer, joining Mark Walton to talk about England's chances and how the how Gareth Southgate has progressed with this England team in the build-up to the World Cup. That's coming up very, very shortly on this podcast. But let's get your thoughts on England. We've got loads of markets on England as a nation, of course, and the Patriotic Pound, Andy, will be behind them. But maybe not as much cash as you'd expect in terms of turnover on England in the lead-up to the Championship.
No, they're in the top five in terms of number of bets laid, and they're in the three losers in the book. But normally they'd be top of the list of losers, and they're not because Brazil are. So, I think the general feeling is still there that, yeah, there's no expectancy on them. In terms of bets that have been laid, the favourite on stage of elimination with the punters is to go out in the quarters. I actually think they might fall at the last 16, but then, because, like I say, if they're playing Colombia, I think that's a definite possibility they'll go out of that stage. Another one, interesting one the punters seem to have latched onto is number of points in the group. There's not a lot of bets in this, but what there have been for England to get none. Nil point.
Really? That's 250-1.
Yeah, so that's the loser in that book. That's partly to do with the price, I think. But it tells you something about where people are thinking. There might be a lot of Scotsmen on that, mind you.
I'm thinking positively. I think they could get 7 points in the group at 11-4. That's where my cash would go. Derek, how do you view England's chances? I mean, we've got stage of elimination, total group points, top team goal scorer betting as well available on the website and on the app.
What price is it not to get out of the group, as a matter of fact?
4-1 to be eliminated at the group stage.
Well, Panama are the whipping boys. So, you know, they'll finish above Panama, you'd imagine. They're not as good as Belgium. And it boils down to Tunisia. How good are they? I think they haven't lost a game until they lost to Spain narrowly in a friendly last weekend. I don't think Tunisia is anywhere as bad as England, to be honest. Seriously, I don't think England have ever named the worst World Cup squad. I don't even think Scotland have. On all known forms, Phil Jones, Kieran Trippier, some players like that, they're not international standard. Then again, on all known form, neither are England. I just can't have them. I think it's a terrible World Cup squad. And you remember some of the squads we've sent there, 1990 in particular, you know, there was a tremendous team. Barnes, Lineker, Gascoigne, players like that. Tremendous. And you got to the semi-final. I mean, even when Sven was in charge, they had a good squad. This is awful. This is like a championship side going up via the playoffs to the Premier League, and seriously, it is. I wouldn't put anybody off back in that 4-1 for them to go out of the group in the group stage.
Wow, Derek. Do you think he made a mistake in terms of the personnel he's taken, or was he hamstrung just by the lack of quality then, Derek?
Mostly the latter. In the former, I would suggest that he should have taken Adam Lallana. I'm not saying he's a world-class player, Adam Lallana, but he gives England something that they haven't got, some sort of guile in midfield. And yeah, okay, he's hardly played for Liverpool this season, but you could argue that is a bonus because, you know, we're forever reading about how tired the players are when they go into these tournaments. Well, he definitely wouldn't have been tired. He'd have been like a new player for them. He should have taken Lallana. And then you look at, you know, you've got Eric Dier, Jordan Henderson, and there's not a place for Lallana. I'm sorry, these players just leave me cold. How are they footballers and I wasn't? It's just madness.
Okay, let's wrap with your best World Cup bets. Derek, what's your best bet for the World Cup?
6-1 Germany not to qualify from Group F.
Wow. I get dead against the Germans then this time around, Derek.
Yeah, I think that's a tough squad. A tough group. Mexico, Sweden and South Korea. That is a real tough group there. And 6-1 for the Germans, who are way over the top now, way past the best. That's just—it's not buying money, obviously it isn't, but it's borrowing it.
Okay, Derek, Andy, your best bet?
Higuain, top goal scorer.
Yeah, 33-1.
Yeah.
You can back that each way as well here with William Hill. Betting quarter the odds 1, 2, 3 and 4. Higuain 33-1 to be top goal scorer. Still to come on this podcast, we'll preview Russia versus Saudi Arabia, which is the first game in Group A. That's coming up at the end of the podcast. But before that, we're going to hear from John Cross in a few moments' time. Derek, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
Andy, thank you.
Have a good World Cup, everybody.
Now it's time to hear from the Daily Mirror's chief football writer, John Cross, who's in conversation with Mark Walton. And Mark starts by asking John the question of whether England are in a better place now to progress deeper into the competition than they have in the previous few World Cups.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, as how you look at it. I mean, I would actually argue that the squad is lacking in certain things more than a squad that I can remember for quite some time. So why are we getting kind of, you know, sort of last-minute expectation and optimism that we're talking about? Because I do think whether there's maybe a little bit of a dearth of midfield, you know, I mean, sort of anchorman midfield particularly. Have we got enough quality centre-halves? You know, kind of is there enough sort of backup sort of strikers? We all know about Harry Kane, obviously. So it has got obvious deficiencies, but where I think it differs from the past is that, and maybe we're sort of kind of, you know, allowing ourselves to be sucked into this, but we haven't got a great sense of sort of expectation simply because we're much more realistic about our opportunities, whereas I think obviously in kind of, and take us back to sort of 2006, the golden generation, we all felt let down because it was without doubt our best opportunity, I think, to do something, I think, since 66. And that, you know, I think sort of from then on, sort of 2010, I don't think the team lived up to expectations or hopes, even though it had still big names in it. And I think then 2014, not getting out of the group was a massive sort of low for the England team. The difference for me now is that maybe you've got some hungry players, younger players. I'm thinking kind of, you know, sort of the likes of Sterling. This is maybe his moment. He was in Brazil, but, you know, this is his time. He's just won the Premier League with Man City. Harry Kane's on fire as one of the best strikers in Europe. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, in contrast to that, he's sort of young, fresh, up and coming. You know, it's Southgate's kind of faith in those younger players to take chances on players that I think has excited the nation, doing different things like Kyle Walker on the right side of the three in defence. And little tweaks like that maybe that is the reason why we're kind of thinking, well, he's trying something different. He's not sticking with the old familiar names. I thought he was bold, you know, during qualifying to axe Wayne Rooney, who was a mainstay of England team, the England captain, of course. And then even with the World Cup final squad, you know, a few of us thought that Joe Hart would definitely be in, largely because, you know, in March, sort of Southgate gave every indication that he would be. But he thought rather than kind of stick with the tried and trusted, actually, he'll go with a player like Nick Pope as the third choice goalkeeper, simply because of the really good season that he's had for unfashionable Burnley. Well, that, you know, that's a breath of fresh air. And I think it's that breath of fresh air and being something different. And also, I think, I guess, we've seen optimism fueled by the sort of younger teams doing well, whether that's the under-17s or the under-21s, whatever it might be, is the reason why we're feeling a little bit more happy and got a bit more affection back for our England team.
Yes, the criticism of the England team in the past has always been that the star names get their shirt no matter what. We don't have those star names anymore, and we've got a group of young players that are all fighting for that place. So you've got these players playing out of their skin to try and get into the England side. Is this the genius of Gareth Southgate? Is he doing that? Is he the first manager that we've seen for a long time to do that and put the faith in the young players and the players that maybe aren't quite as sexy or play for, you know, better clubs and just everyone's in there on merit? Is that something he's deliberately trying to do, do you think?
I think so. I think it's really interesting in the last few years, whether it's the sort of last year or the last couple of years, about sort of members of that golden generation talking about the cliques in the dressing room. And the one thing I can absolutely say is that this dressing room doesn't have cliques. It doesn't have kind of that sort of pockets of, you know, sort of Man United v Liverpool or Chelsea against the rest or whatever it might be. You know, sort of kind of, you know, sometimes you get big names and big egos in there. And that split was very obvious. Whereas I think the togetherness now is there for all to see. And I think that is a real big difference and a big change, I think, in attitude for this squad this time around.
We've seen a big change in the press conference as well, of course. We need to mention that. We had the 23-man Super Bowl-style press conference, really, where every player was involved. Every player spoke to the media. This is something we've not seen from England before or from football, really, recently. And I know Gareth Southgate spent a bit of time with some of the NFL coaches and so on and so forth. Is that his decision or is it the FA's decision? How did that even come about?
Well, very much a sort of a meeting of minds on this one. I know that sort of Southgate sort of said to the various heads department, and that obviously included the media department, you know, I want to know about what you would do in your team and how you would do things differently. And I think there was a sort of a together sortness of kind of an agreement, if you like, that the media team wanted to be a bit more open. Honestly, it used to be kind of lockdown at St George's Park. You were sort of ushered from the main building and kept very much in kind of, you know, in one section of the hotel, walked down to open training when it was open, you know, and walked strictly back afterwards and stuff. And you sort of kind of, you could feel the air, sort of eyes glare into the back of your head, sort of as you were sort of even making sort of a break from working, sort of going to the toilet sort of thing. These days it's so different. It's kind of, there's a sort of a bit of a media hub. Even away from this, you know, you're getting sort of players sort of milling around a little bit more, staff milling around a little bit more about the building, encouraged to go and sort of speak to them, and sort of in the futsal, which is the main sort of hall, sort of the indoor training area when sometimes sort of press events were held there. And I think that it was just a sort of a step further from that. I know that the sort of the media team, it has been that their long sort of held ambition to sort of really sort of move away from set piece interviews where you'd have one player a day, which you'd sort of see played out on the TV and radio, and then in the following day's newspapers. And the newspaper man, that could be frustrating for us as well, because you feel like you've seen it all the day before, the lunchtime before. So it was good to get our own access to stuff and our own sort of separate stuff. And indeed, the FA did pay that visit to sort of, you know, last winter to the NFL to see how it works. They have a sort of complete open house there. And that was obviously replicated at St George's Park, and it brought some really good results, you know, sort of kind of thing. The sort of atmosphere was different. The players, I think, largely enjoyed it almost to a man. They were talking about how much they sort of enjoyed it, whether that was getting it away in one sort of foul swoop or just genuinely doing something different. It is quite another matter. But I do think it was something that encouraged the players to be a little bit more open. It was obviously sort of Danny Rose sort of gave a bit of a bombshell interview, and it was just something that I think all parties enjoyed, and it summed up a new sort of openness and sort of friendliness about Gareth Southgate's current England squad.
Yeah, there's the talk that it could mean more relaxed players, really. You know, the fact that they've all had their say, they all feel included, they all feel a part of the squad, and because there's no pressure not to say anything or pressure to only talk about certain things, does it help that, do you think? Does it make a more relaxed and a more welcome and a more open England camp? Is that going to prove to me better football on the pitch?
Yeah, I think that. Look, I think the general public sometimes kind of, you know, think, oh, it's just sort of the pressmen sort of wittering on about kind of, you know, their own self-interest here and they're sort of not interested. But I do think it goes beyond that, because I thought that in Euro 2016, there was a real lockdown, sort of kind of them and us. I mean, to reach certain extent that basically that sort of the players were even told not to discuss what they did sort of in their own leisure time. And it became a bit of a standing joke amongst the press guys. We can't even ask them about darts. I mean, when you have that sort of kind of inhibiting atmosphere where the players sort of feel nervous in those sort of public situations, is that really good for team morale? I don't think so. And one of the first things that sort of, you know, Southgate tried to instigate when he took over was that kind of feeling of openness. He's very good with the media himself. He realises the value in it. And I do think that kind of that those, you know, the players who shouldn't be afraid of talking to the media just creates a bit more of a free spirit and open-mindedness. And I think if players are a bit more relaxed about the way they speak and about the way they behave in public, then that's got to be a good thing, I think, for the squad, not just in media terms, but I also think for the way that they play and prepare.
Any other differences in the way the team has prepared for the World Cup? Can you see any major differences in this team and under Gareth Southgate to what we've seen going into big tournaments before?
I just think it's... I do feel as if last time, when we headed to the Euros, we had a similar sort of long break between the sort of the end of the Premier League season and the tournament. And I think the difference this time is that basically we go to the World Cup on the back of that long break. But I do think that Southgate has done his very best to kind of just make it as interesting as possible. They're going to Russia quite late by comparison, less than a week before they kick off there, so they sort of get their boundaries are out. But they were given a little bit of time off after the end of the season. The players that are involved in the FA Cup were given an extra week. The players that were involved in the Champions League were given an extra week on from their game. So I do think it's a little bit more relaxed. I think Gareth Southgate described the sort of the boredom factor, which players always complain about, as nonsense. And I understand where he's coming from, because really, if you can't dedicate yourself, for a short space of time, but it is about that kind of, I think the Italians, have a very different attitude towards pre-season training, for example. You're locked away in a camp. It's 24/7. It's intense. We don't do that. And I think, therefore, when we go away to sort of kind of big tournaments, the idea that sort of Capello had of locking away, and being completely focused for a World Cup just didn't go down well. It didn't work with those players. And therefore, I think you have to find that happy balance, which I think Southgate is able to do, just being a bit more relaxed, but also making sure that everyone is focused.
And obviously the most recent football we've seen from the side, two friendlies going into the World Cup, beat Costa Rica 2-0 at Elland Road, they beat Nigeria 2-1 at Wembley. What do you take from those friendlies? We saw two different sides, really, didn't we, turning out in both of those. Anybody stand out to you in particular?
Well, Rashford in the second game, for sure, but I still think that he'll be an impact player from the bench. I don't think he'll start. I think that the thing that I took out was that basically Stones was the only player that started both. 10 changes for the second game. I think Stones, outstanding, I think, in both games, really comfortable on the ball, brings the ball out. I think that the other thing I took from the second game was that how good the competition was, that players embraced the competition and they were ready to fight for their places. That again, sort of alludes to a good spirit behind the scenes. I think the first game was basically, bar a few, very, very close to what you'll see as the starting lineup against Tunisia. So I do expect you'll see Pickford. I do expect that the only sort of change in defence might be, or a debate might be in defence on the left side of centre-half, whether it's Cahill or indeed Maguire. I think, Rose or Young might be a talking point at left wing-back. But I do think otherwise than that, I think you'll see that sort of the line-up with Henderson perhaps, doing enough against Costa Rica to ensure that he maybe starts ahead of Dyer, that sort of thing, really. And then obviously I just think we've seen the value yet again of Harry Kane, because my word, England will rely so much on Harry Kane. He's one of Europe's best strikers. He takes shots early. The fact that he's captain makes him perhaps puts more responsibility on his shoulders, and I think that can be a good thing. Shows how important he is to the team. And I just think I can take some really good positives out, but I do think that the sort of the outline was pretty clear what Southgate's team is likely to be very close to be in the first game, but with one of two, genuine question marks posed in the second game.
That brings on nicely, actually, to the top team goalscorer marker. You mentioned Harry Kane there, 41 goals this season. He's England captain. He is very much the talisman of this young squad. He's 11-10 to be top England goalscorer. Raheem Sterling 11-2. Dele Alli is 8-1. Jamie Vardy 8-1 as well, as is Marcus Rashford. Jesse Lingard is 11-1. Danny Welbeck 14s, 20s bar those. Is it all about Harry Kane in terms of England goals at the World Cup?
Yeah, it is, really. I tell you why. I think it's bizarre that if you put together the other goal scoring threats, if you like, so I'm talking Sterling, Lingard, and Alli, they've got something like 91 between them for their clubs this season, and yet actually it's a very paltry offering when it comes to England goals. Sterling doesn't score enough for England. Alli, I would say again the same sort of, Lingard, I think only recently sort of broke his England duck. So, those are guys that need to be scoring goals, and the goals issue is the biggest thing for England. And I think Southgate trying to get as many goal threats and many attacking players on the pitch is vital. But I do think ultimately all about Harry Kane, who's got a better than 1-2 goal scoring record for England. If you needed a threat off the bench, Danny Welbeck goes to the World Cup within that squad as England's leading goal scorer, which is remarkable, really. But I do think that sort of sooner or later in that tournament, Danny Welbeck has got to be worth a look, because I think it's now 16 goals, having scored against Costa Rica, for his country. out of, you know, again, not too many appearances. And again, it's similar to sort of kind of, you know, one and two. That's some goal threat. Welbeck is a really sort of kind of underrated player for England, because whenever he puts on the England shirt, you know, something generally always happens.
Yeah, he's 14-1 if you want to take a look at him for that as well. And you can sometimes find a little bit of an obscure angle in these as well. If you remember back in 2010, I'm not sure anybody would have backed it, but Matthew Upson was joint England top goal scorer at that World Cup. But Harry Kane, 11-10, it looks too good to be true, that price. If you know, he's going to be the main man, isn't he? So you're getting odds against that. What about total group points? Do you think England win all three? Do you think they win two of them? How many points do you think England will actually get?
I'm going to go five. I think that they could end up drawing that first game against Tunisia, as that's what we do at World Cups. Then we win the next game against Panama and then draw against Belgium. So I just think, having watched Tunisia, they are not a team to be taken lightly. They're a strong physical team, very well organised. England's biggest problem will be breaking them down. If England get an early goal, home and hose, they'll win the game. But if, the longer the game goes on, when they had a very, very narrow defeat to a late goal against Spain on Saturday, and I was very impressed with Tunisia's organisation. So I'd have a look at that game. That game, England should win it, but it's not a given. And I just think it might end up as a frustrating 0-0 draw.
Well, if you do agree with John there as well, by the way, five as the total points, so exactly 5 points, 9-1 for that, which is quite a big price. If you think they may come unstuck against Belgium as well, 4 points might be of interest to you. That's 9-2, but yeah, and you could back under 6.5 group points at 8-11 if you want to play it a little bit safer, so that way they can, you know, get 6 points, 5 points, 4 points, whatever. 8-11 the price of that. What about the big question then? Stage of elimination. How far do England get? The group stage is 4-1, last 16, 2-1, quarter-final 11-5, semi-final 5-1, runner-up 10-1, and to win it is 16-1. How far do England get?
I'm going to go quarter-final, and I know I'm getting carried away again, and I do think that quarter-final would be a good return for England. England haven't won a knockout game since 2006. It's incredible, but I do think that they've got this opportunity, because I think the likelihood is they'll get out the group. And then their likely opponents, looking at the makeup of the sort of the group they would play, I would think would be Poland or Colombia. And I do feel that would give England an opportunity. It's not a given, but I do think it would give them an opportunity to win that game and reach the quarterfinals, where potentially they could be facing Germany or Brazil. So I think that's as good as it gets. But, you know, I do feel that England have got a chance to make the quarterfinals. Then it becomes exciting.
Anything can happen once you get to the quarterfinals, of course. But not in England, it will be an exit out of the quarterfinals. It's quite interesting to think, isn't it, that, you know, 10 years ago quarterfinals would have been a disappointing result. Now that would be a success for England. I suppose it just shows where the squad is at the moment. What about the whole tournament anyway? Who wins it? If you think England will get quarterfinals and get knocked out, who goes on to win the tournament?
I think France will win it. I am changing, and so I make no bones about this, because a month ago I said Germany. But I think that France, just with their attacking talent, they've got incredible midfield as well. I think they've got so many options. They've got a decent defence, a very good goalkeeper, and I just think they're balanced right throughout the squad, really. I think they've got the best squad. It's all about whether Deschamps finds the right balance, because you might remember during the Euros, even when they reached obviously the final in their own, you know, country when they hosted it, it was all about kind of trying to find that right balance. And sometimes it was Deschamps, whether he was sort of kind of bold enough to drop a player who maybe wasn't as good. Remember sort of the issue, the sort of kind of trying to give it a bit of better balance with Sissoko, for example, and things like that, really. And I guess it's about, if France can find the right formula, then they've definitely got the best players, and I would fancy them to win it.
11-2 in the market to win the World Cup. France, the favourites there. Brazil 4-1, Germany 9-2, France 11-2, Spain are 6-1, Argentina 9-1, Belgium 11s, England 16s, 25-1 or bigger prices for the remainder. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, John. Very best of luck with what you mentioned for us there, and enjoy it over in Russia.
Thanks so much. Nice to speak to you.
The World Cup with William Hill.
We're live for every second of the tournament with in-place stats, best bets, and updates from our World Cup reporters. Listen and bet at williamhill.com or on the app.
The World Cup on InPlay Radio.
So this is what we've all been waiting for. The World Cup starts off with the host Russia taking on Saudi Arabia, the two lowest ranked teams in the tournament kicking off the World Cup. The Russians 2-5 to win the match, the draw 16-5 with Saudi Arabia in the betting at 8-1. A whole host of enhancements on the William Hill website and on the app as well. A couple that may be interesting for you. A goal to be scored in the first 15 minutes was 5-2. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Russia to win 2-0 or 2-1 was 11-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Mr. Alex Dunn joins myself, Dave Kellner, here.
Hello.
To preview this match. Russia, pretty sure odds to start the World Cup with a win. And Stanislav Churchesov, he became the manager after their disappointments in Euro 2016. He's changed quite a lot, the former goalkeeper, mainly defensively, where he's relying on youngsters in this tournament. They've still got Zhagoyev and Fedor Shmolov going strongly, so they've got a mix of youth and experience.
They have, but they're too short here, Dave, from a betting point of view.
Okay.
Way too short. If you said to me who's going to win this match, I'd say Russia. But do I want to back them at 2-5? When you look at some of the 2-5s or prices similar to that that are available later on in the tournament, I cannot back Russia at that price. Do I think that Saudi Arabia will win? No. So, sort of leads me to, do I want to back the draw? I think that at the prices, the draw has to be the bet. But there's a bit of value that I think I found elsewhere.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's saying that this is going to be the best game in the World Cup.
I think it's unlikely to be the best game in the World Cup. I'll stick my neck on the block there.
I think it's only marginally going to be the best game on Thursday. And I don't know what else is on Thursday elsewhere. Russia and under 2.5 goals.
Yes.
Is 9-5.
Okay.
That's one heck of a lot more palatable than 2-5.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to rip Saudi Arabia to shreds. To shreds. Definitely not to shreds. That's not a word. I think as well at... I know that if you're backing Russia on under 2.5, you're backing Russia to win to nil as well.
Mm.
So it's a 1-0 or a 2-0 win. And do you want to take 9-5 on that Dutch? I think on this occasion, yes, it's okay to do so. Under 2.5 match goals, 8-13. It's maybe a little short for a single, but if you put it together with a few others, it's not the worst price. It's an uninspiring start to the World Cup, but Russia on under 2.5 at 9-5, small stakes, is a fair start.
Let me just give you a quick word on Saudi Arabia, who have been in turmoil. They are the lowest ranked of these qualifiers, but it's interesting if you're following Saudi Arabia, because they have a new manager seemingly every other month. They've had three in the last 12 months, and it's going to be Juan Antonio Pizzi, who led Chile to the 2016 Copa America, that is going to take them into Russia. He's been appointed. The squad lacks talent, lacks international experience. They finished second in the Asian Group B behind Japan to qualify for the tournament. They managed to beat the lesser sides in that group and just squeaked home. They are the huge outsiders to win the tournament, Saudi Arabia. I think Russia will be too strong, but I like the angle you're looking at. Yep. Russia to win narrowly in a low-scoring affair.
I just think you look at the 2-5 available and you look elsewhere within the tournament. You can also get around 2-5, granted a little shorter, sort of threes on Germany to win their group.
Yes.
And I know which of the shorties I'd rather back. They're too short, but they should win. If you're looking for an outright and you have to play the outrights, I'd back the draw at the price it is. But I do think Russia will end up winning. There's just no price to do so. So Russia and under 2.5 would be my selection at 9-5.
That's it for the pre-tournament World Cup podcast here with William Hill. Do check out the William Hill website and don't forget Bet Boost, available on each and every World Cup game here with William Hill as well. A daily podcast coming to you throughout the entire month. Enjoy the opening day of the 2018 World Cup with William Hill.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling.
Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.